We're in a war against disease, and we're losing the war because of lack of resources. And the only way the public health officials throughout the world, but mostly here in the United States, can cope with this war is to receive the financial funding that is necessary to maintain the structure to protect the lives of American people.
We'll look at the fragile shield protecting Americans from a world of diseases on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Keith Porter. Around the world, mankind is in a mighty battle with diseases of all kinds. Public health officials in the U.S. have long believed that controlling or eradicating diseases like smallpox, polio, or even the Ebola virus before they reach our shores is in the best interest of all Americans, an ounce of prevention being worth a pound of cure. But with the public mood seemingly against spending money overseas, the ounce of prevention may be in jeopardy. We first hear from Frank Lustumbo, president of the National Council for International Health.
In the public health arena, we have a combination of USAID-funded programs, which is essentially the international arm that funds all of the international health programs overseas, as well as other programs related to those. And in addition, here in the States, the Public Health Service has an infrastructure which essentially has a preventive public health function, and the two together essentially provide the protection of disease and other health interventions that are necessary to protect Americans here, but other people throughout the world. Interventions such as those that were made in smallpox and achieved tremendous savings by eliminating smallpox and therefore saving millions and millions of dollars to the United States are one example of those kinds of programs. A more recent one is the eradication of polio in this hemisphere. As you know, polio is still present in the rest of the world. However, through efforts by USAID and the Pan American Health Organization and the other organizations I just mentioned, including CDC, and supported by private sector organizations such as Rotary and organizations such as Save the Children and CARE, all working together in a very unique relationship, has achieved eradication of polio in this hemisphere. However, the dilemma is it still exists throughout the world. And without a very small investment on our part of, say, something like $30 million, we will have to continue to spend $200, $300 million per year to protect and immunize our citizens here in the States against the introduction of polio.
The issues in terms of protection of the American population from diseases that could very well arrive here from beyond our borders really goes to three areas.
This is Dr. Niels Dallaire, Deputy Administrator at USAID, the Agency for International Development. He's the leading expert on international health in the Clinton administration.
One of those is the ability to detect these diseases when they occur and as they emerge in other countries. It's called surveillance. It's a task that AID has been heavily involved with over several decades. We've supported both national governments and CDC, who's worked jointly with us in partnership in many countries carrying out disease surveillance. A second issue is outbreak control, responding to crises when they occur. The most recent and dramatic example of that was the Ebola outbreak in Zaire. Within a matter of days from the time that this was notified to the international community, AID had mobilized large quantities of materials, supplies, and expertise, and had them en route to Zaire. And within less than 2 weeks of the time of the outbreak, or the public awareness of the outbreak, AID had committed nearly $750,000 to this effort. Obviously, the ability to move quickly and act quickly is critically important when you have a disease such as Ebola. But probably the most important of all of the things that we do is in a third category, which is fundamentally in prevention. Most of the diseases that are really going to threaten the health of the American public today are not the exotic diseases such as Ebola. They're the commonplace. Measles, during the time that Ebola killed 200 people in Zaire, measles killed something on the order of 25,000 people, mostly children. And We recognize that many of these diseases pose considerable risks back here because we no longer have to deal with them. Polio, as Frank has said, is one of the primary ones. We've eradicated it in the Western Hemisphere, largely through the investments made by AID. But as long as one case of wild polio exists in Africa or Asia, the risk is that it could be reintroduced to our population and we could once again be facing this scourge. We've got other diseases such as tuberculosis, which is an enormous problem throughout the world today and has come back in a major way in the United States. Again, if we don't deal with these issues in places where they're, if you will, festering sores, the time will come when we'll have to deal with them at much greater cost and at much higher personal cost to the American people right here at home.
Let's go through those three categories one more time. You had surveillance.
Surveillance, outbreak control, and basic prevention. And the issue with basic prevention is that you can't do, it's not a quick fix job. Basic prevention requires the building of health systems in the countries where these problems exist. You can't do tuberculosis control by flying in a SWAT team from Atlanta or from Geneva. You have to build the capacity at the local level to detect the disease, to treat it appropriately, to have good supply systems with antibiotics, and to monitor and manage the programs adequately at the local level.
I work in the research arena, and the National Institutes of Health is number one, a domestic research agency, but number two, we're concerned with the disease problems which can be prevented or treated both at home and overseas.
Our third guest is Dr. Carl Western. He's Assistant Director of International Research at the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. It's part of the National Institutes of Health.
Our mission is very complementary to that of USAID in that AID supports international surveillance, international outbreak control, and helps develop national infrastructure for prevention activities. What we do is that we invest heavily in basic research in the expectation that that investment will pay off in better approaches to the diagnosis of disease conditions, new and improved vaccine and other prevention products, and new or innovative approaches towards the treatment of disease conditions that are important both here and globally around the world.
Well, now that we've talked some about this, Frank, tell us what the big threats are to this fragile shield.
Well, the threats are many. There was a very large meeting of the Pan American Health Organization and the World Health Organization. USAID participated, people from CDC. And in fact, every sector was represented, and the topic was new and emerging diseases. And essentially, the group is working on developing a plan of action, which is both national and global and regional, to deal with the problem of new and emerging diseases. Yet, as I sat there listening to the various folks going over the various threats, the thought kept coming to me, without money, the best plan in the world will not be able to be achieved. And that's our dilemma here. If you look at what has occurred over the past 10 years in the public health side, I think there was an article by Mike McGuinness not too long ago which said that some $847 million that was normally allocated to public health prevention programs here in the States, they're mainly child programs and health prevention programs, is being cut by 50% in this forthcoming Senate. In addition, as you know, the programs under USAID, we have less than 1% of the entire budget, and that's being further cut. So what happens is, on both sides of the aisle in terms of foreign assistance and public health assistance, you have tremendous cuts to a very small amount of funding, which supports the, we call it the fragile health infrastructure that prevents Americans from getting diseases. I think, as Carl pointed out, the laboratory support is critical because it's long range. The reason we were able to handle the hantavirus outbreak in the Southwest was because of work that was done by our people at Fort Detrick, the U.S. Army Research and Infectious Disease Unit there, which essentially was working on protecting GIs in Korea. And in the middle 70s, they isolated what they later termed the hantavirus. And because of that basic research and development, when that outbreak occurred among a mouse population in the Southwest, the CDC and Public Health Service team were able to go in and immediately recognize that this was the problem and essentially put in a prevention and control program. So without that kind of outreach, we aren't going to be prepared for handling diseases that are coming in. I also read with great alarm just recently that the current Congress is adding to the budget some $38 billion for the new B-2 stealth bomber. You know, if only one or two of those B-2 stealth bomber, which I think is somewhere around $1.9 billion apiece, were allocated to foreign assistance and one allocated to public health, I think we wouldn't be having these problems, and the health of Americans would be put in its proper perspective.
Nils, any thoughts on the threats to this?
I think Frank is absolutely right that national security has to be seen as something other than massing armies on a border. And I think that some of the political decisions being made right now in Congress are remarkable for their short-sightedness. Let me go back to the budget issues that he mentioned. Right now we're facing in various congressional committees budget cuts that have been proposed, which range at the low end at 28% to a high end of, I think, 37%. So these are massive budget cuts. And these come on top of budget cuts which have taken place over the last 2 years as a consequence of the Clinton administration's efforts to reduce the budget deficit of about 20% in our overall development assistance budget. So we, in fact, what we're talking about is by the time this process is finished, if it goes forward as it seems to be, that the U.S. will be investing in this element of our national security less than 50% of what we were investing only a few years ago. That's a massive change, and it has enormous downstream consequences. One of the things that has been proposed in Congress as a way of addressing this is to set up, as part of our foreign assistance, a separate account for child survival and infectious diseases, which is a very nice thought. But in fact, when you look at the figures, they don't really add up. The language of the legislation states that this is a high priority and needs to be protected, but in fact, the budgetary amounts set aside represent a real cut in expenditures in this area. And as I said, what we're talking about here is getting national health systems on their own feet. We have done this successfully in many countries. Thailand is one remarkable example where investments made by USAID over the course of 25 years have turned Thailand into a health system which is totally self-sufficient, extremely dynamic, and has had dramatic effects on stabilizing rapid population growth and improving the health of their populations. We're simply not going to be able to do this around the world anymore. We're going to have to pick and choose a few countries, hope that we pick right. We can't ever predict where things are suddenly going to emerge as they did in Zaire, but it's making some very difficult, what we're facing basically is Sophie's choice at this point.
We're talking on this edition of Common Ground about how Americans benefit from health care aid given overseas. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available from Journal Graphics. Listen at the end of the broadcast for details. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs.
I think it's fair to say that the U.S. biomedical research effort is under a severe belt tightening and has been for several years.
Dr. Carl Western is from the National Institutes of Health.
What's actually being proposed for the overall National Institutes of Health is an immediate reduction of approximately 5% in actual cost and then a level budget for the next several years. That's going to be devastating to the medical schools and universities that not only carry out the bulk of NIH-supported research, but these are the institutions that produce the doctors and the nurses and the public health professionals that are going to be involved in both our domestic and overseas activities. Another major impact on other public health service agencies, which are much more heavily dependent on people, is staff reductions. We've mentioned unexpected conditions like the Ebola virus outbreak in Zaire. There are literally no more than two or three laboratories that are capable of doing work on the Ebola virus. And they're not in Africa. They're here in the USA. The other nature of these laboratories is that ordinarily they can't work on more than one or at the most two of these dangerous agents at the same time. So we have a situation where there is very immediate and rapid danger of system overload, combined with the fact that the people who developed the skill and expertise in dealing with these agents in the 70s and the 80s are moving on, retiring, leaving government, etc. So the impact on the domestic agencies is equally severe.
Carl has an important point here, and that is, if you remember when I mentioned about the hantavirus outbreak in the Southwest, CDC had to actually reach in and find out one of their people who had retired a year or two beforehand. Well, now, if you compare that to the recent use of replacement players in baseball and how the public reacted to that, here we're talking about the prevention and protection of their health, which ought to be pretty important, and yet we have to use replacement players because our personnel capability has been so reduced over the last 10 years that we don't have the experienced young folks coming up to take the baton from those who are ready to retire and leave the service.
Again, here is Frank Listumbo from the National Council for International Health.
And so we need to invest these small amounts, and they're so pitifully small that they can't even begin to help to adjust or balance the large trillion-dollar budget we have. So why are we wasting our time? Let's put the importance of the American people first. Let's invest in health both internationally and nationally, and let's take maybe four or five of those B-2 bombers and allocate those costs where they're really needed for the health and protection of the American public.
Frank, I think probably all of us here saw that story earlier this year in the New York Times about the Centers for Disease Control, and it talked about the conditions at the laboratory. But one thing that struck me out of that article was it said that the CDC in recent months had to reject requests from Bolivia, Nigeria, and the United Arab Emirates for help in investigating outbreaks of hemorrhagic fever in those countries. And the article went on to say, to give the scenario of how those diseases could, you know, infect travelers and be brought into the United States. I thought that was, to me, one of the most disturbing things in the article was the fact that the CDC had to, you know, couldn't respond to the bell when they were asked to come help.
It is, and it's even worse than that, because if we had another Ebola outbreak or a cholera outbreak or a major outbreak in one part of the world, and then we had a similar type of an outbreak here, we would be hard-pressed to handle both. And that's a very alarming situation. Over and above that, I think, you know, CDC has been honestly taking a look at how they can deploy their meager resources to combat these kinds of issues. And what's going to happen is they're going to have to say no and no and no more often. And the more often we ignore problems of poverty and ill health throughout the world, the more we increase the risk of our citizens coming down with something similar or disastrous. I think we have to recognize in today's modern world, transportation and the movement of people is just at unprecedented numbers. Every one of our major cities in the U.S. is a major gateway that opens up every nook and cranny of America to every nook and cranny of the entire world. And in addition to that movement of people, we have animals, exotic animals, we have plants, and so this introduces new hosts and new vectors. New hosts are various types of animals that we have never had that are not indigenous to the United States, and we have new vectors such as rodents and mosquitoes, which will carry different numbers of variables, and therefore yellow fever, meningitis, and these kinds of diseases, and dengue fever, which we've been insulated from so far, but which is endemic throughout the Americas, Latin America and Caribbean, is also a problem for it.
Dr. Carl Western, do you personally feel threatened by these kind of things?
Well, as someone who frequently travels around the world, the answer is yes. But you don't have to go to very far away, very poor countries in order to feel threatened by preventable infectious disease, other preventable health problems. Lots of Americans who live and travel overseas, but there are lots of people from overseas who come and visit and who come to live in the USA. And indeed, this is a global village in which these infectious microbes do not know boundaries or nationalities.
Keith, the dynamic that we've been talking about here, I think, is probably as old as biology, but it's one that has some new characteristics that have developed over the past 50 years or so.
This again is Dr. Nils Dallaire from USAID.
Basically, life is a continuous struggle between hosts, human beings in this case, and pathogens. And we have made tremendous progress in the 20th century in being able to deal with a large number of these pathogens through antibiotics and public health measures. But in the past several years, we have forgotten the fact that as human numbers increase, the available resources for the pathogens to take hold in have also increased and have made it much more possible for resistant strains and new strains to emerge in human populations, while at the same time, as Frank discussed, the growth of international travel and rapid international travel has meant that basically we are, if you will, a soup of humanity that you can't simply isolate into one part or another. As long as we continue to look at public health in the U.S. as a U.S.-only issue, we're at very serious risk of forgetting what's going on in the rest of the world. And once these issues, drug resistance being a predominant one, not only in tuberculosis, the most recent issue of Consumer Reports has a section on antibiotic resistance, and most of the world's antibiotic resistance is not, which is basically bacteria which no longer respond to the basic antibiotics that have been developed over the years. Most of that is not coming from the U.S. It's coming from parts of the world where health systems are weak, where someone may not be able to afford to take a whole 10-day or 2-week course of an antibiotic, and therefore they take 2 or 3 days until they feel better, which is the best way in the world to develop resistance, where prescribing practices are poor or non-existent. And continuously at this point, we're introducing newer, stronger, and more dangerous pathogens into our human environment, which really pose a tremendous risk to us.
Nils put it very nicely. We're in a war against disease, and we're losing the war because of lack of resources. And when has this country ever shirked from a war? They've always put the required, adequate resources necessary to achieve the objective. Well, in the public health arena, the amount of monies needed are so small as to be laughable. A few hundred million here and there have such tremendous results that they pave the way for education programs, for micro-enterprise development programs, and for future trading partners to be able to create a safer community and a safer world. So we need to recognize that we're in a war, and the only way the public health officials throughout the world, but mostly here in the United States, can cope with this war is to receive the financial funding that is necessary to maintain the structure to protect the lives of American people.
The Director General of the World Health Organization, Hiroshi Nakajima, I read a quote from him recently where he said that poverty is the world's deadliest disease. And this was a topic that came up again in Copenhagen at the Social Summit as well. Frank, do you have a comment just on that concept?
Well, he's right. One-fifth of the world's population lives in poverty, but there's another statistic that he mentioned that is perhaps even more important. 40% of the world is sick at any one point in time. Now, let's go back to many of the factors we mentioned before. If two-fifths of the world population is sick, and if a large number of the world's population is traveling and interacting with the rest of the world, the fact that these diseases are going to be spread is just a normal, common incident. So I think Dr. Nakajima and WHO is absolutely correct.
And Nils Dallaire, I'll give you the final word on this.
Well, thank you. This is the reason that we are called and are, in fact, the Agency for International Development rather than the Agency for International Health. Many of our programs focus on health and on family planning and population issues, but many of them focus on other elements of the root causes of poverty in the developing world. And we believe very strongly that we have to work across the spectrum of issues that cause poverty in the developing world in order to deal with both health issues and issues of social development and social justice. Let me give you some examples of what disease poverty brings. A child born in the United States versus a child born into a poor country in the world. The child in the poor country is 10 times as likely to die in the first year of life. A woman who is pregnant in a poor country is more than 20 times as likely to die as a consequence of her pregnancy than a woman who is pregnant in the United States. There are the likelihood of a pregnancy being unwanted and unintended in the developing world are more than 4 times as high as the likelihood of any given pregnancy in the U.S. being unwanted and unintended, which has a lot to do with the global population growth. Measles, which is not a serious disease in the United States, not one that many of the parents in my community worry about it for their children, kills over 1 million children around the world every year. Small issues such as vitamin A deficiency, something that our kids get from eating carrots and fruits and vegetables. Vitamin A deficiency may be responsible for as many as 500,000 child deaths a year. All of these are issues that relate directly to poverty, and underlying that, of course, is the vast amount of malnutrition, undernutrition in children and adults around the world, which is directly a consequence of their level of poverty. Unless we can work across the board on improving the conditions of life, on looking at what the root causes are, and developing workable, long-term, and sustainable strategies for addressing these in the countries which are most affected, we're not going to be able to have the effect on health and disease that we want, and we're not going to be able to do the kind of job in protecting the American public that the public deserves.
Dr. Nils Dallaire is from the U.S. Agency for International Development. Our other guests have been Dr. Carl Western from the National Institutes for Health and Frank Listumbo from the National Council for International Health. For Common Ground, I'm Keith Porter. For a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9531, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. Again, ask for program number 9531. To order by credit card, call toll-free 1-800-825-5746. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation or you have some comment about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. Again, the toll-free number to order cassettes or transcripts is 1-800-825-5746. Theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.